to Chapter Chat. My name's Christine.
And I'm Natasha.
And today we are digging into chapters 37 to 40 in House of Flame and Shadow.
Yep.
We open up on chapter 37 with Rune. Do you want to start us off today, Natasha? No?
Yes. Yeah. I was just trying to figure out like what happened in this chapter.
It's his hand.
So Lydia died. That's where we left off.
Died. She has a fist-sized hole through her fucking chest.
Where did I put this? Oh, her lungs repaired. Yeah. Ribs rebuilt. Cracked skull.
Brains stuffed back into her
Ew,
head.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. What? It's pretty nasty.
Like, it's just, I don't understand the healing stuff.
Well, the other stuff, world. I'm like, I can go along with it until I read the line that was like brain stuff back in. And I was like, that doesn't sound right.
No.
She wouldn't be, how, what? How? Those are different. That's different.
I just don't understand because like, well, I guess Sigrid, is that her name?
No, Sigrid's dead. That's the Fendir heir.
Yeah, who's the other? Who's the mom? Who's Danica's mom?
Sabine.
She was also shot in the head. And she...
Yeah, and she healed. Yeah, I know. But, like, shot in the face.
Still gets to your brain.
Well, the thing is, she wasn't shot in the head. She hit the water really hard. And I think that's what smashed her head. She said she was shot right through the heart.
Oh, yeah, she was shot right through the heart. Yeah. Okay.
So, shot through the heart. And you're too late.
Give it love. A bad name. So, okay. This is Rune has been next to Lydia for days while she heals.
She's like Edward. Wait. She's like Edward in Twilight sitting staring at her as she's in the hospital room.
Yes. Except Rune is also healing simultaneously.
His hand is coming back.
Yeah. His hand? He's like, I didn't want the first light. I wanted it all to go to Lydia. And so I guess I just have to grow back my hand the old fashioned way. And it's like this baby ghostly hand, like, you know, like those little like mini hands.
Imagining. Ew, you're imagining it gross. You're imagining it like Men in Black. I'm imagining it like a real hand.
He says like his hand was like very light colored. It's probably translucent. It's gross.
Yuck. Oh yeah, the Medwitch try to give him light treatments and he's like, no, there's only a few, give them all to her. That's why she's alive. Her heart stopped three separate times, and three separate times Hunt had to go in there and zap her.
Yeah, to jumpstart her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sad times.
And did we talk about how, so like Therion did make it to her, but kind of, but then he uses like plume of water to like cushion her, but she's still like,
she's still falling dead from the sky. So still a big impact.
So we push back. Well, basically like Tristan is like, you need to go back. You need to heal. And he's like, no, I don't want to. And he's like, okay, well, what if we switch off? And he's like, no. So I think Tristan and Declan like switch off, like watching Rune watch Lydia.
Rune watch Lydia.
Do you have anything else in this section?
Yeah, I do. Rune is so annoying. He's like, the last thing I said to her was that she's dead to me. And Tristan's like, you didn't mean it. And he's like, I did, though. And it's just like, maybe don't say dickish shit like that to anyone ever. You never want the last thing you say to someone that you loved to be, you're dead to me.
Well, also, I think there's also a section where he's like, and I'm sitting here and I'm watching the hind who I hate, but also who I love, who's done all these terrible things,
Shut
but I love her.
Off.
I think that's why I love Lydia so much, because she has such like a great redemption arc, and that's one of my favorite things to read in order
she's
to watch happen.
She's such a layered character too.
Yeah,
she's got layers.
So we shoot back to Hunt. The first thing he is like, he misses Bryce and he wants to find her. He doesn't know where she is now that he's not thinking about his survival. Now he's like, where is she?
What now?
Honestly, a lot of the section, I just kind of like, it was all just like him trying to figure out where Bryce could be and what Bryce could want.
He's feeling really guilty. He's like, yeah. No one would be in this situation if I didn't push them to be in this situation. And now he's a slave again. And he's like, can mm-hmm. I even be a prince now? It's a lot of like sad reflection.
Yeah.
Because Therian is also like mm-hmm. feeling really down on himself too.
Yeah.
And he's out to lunch with Therian.
Well, there's so many like real things that happen in this book that's like very human compared to ACOTAR, where like yeah. he's out to lunch with Therian.
they're lunching, as the sprite said.
Yeah, so his initial thought is he's like, okay, well, I need something to do because Bryce would want to get the Asteri secret out. So I think I need to set up a meeting with the Ocean Queen. So that's why he mm-hmm. goes to Therian. There's also this really sad part because when the sprites are there, he looks over at them and it made me cry because he looks at them and he thinks about how Lahaba would absolutely love them and how like she would fit right in there.
Yeah. And they're like really uncomfortable because they're fire sprites that are stuck in a submersible. So they don't want to like get them out of their room. They're just binge watching Selling Sunset. Like the Midgard version of Selling Sunset.
How do you picture this Death Charger?
So I picture it like a cruise ship underwater.
Yes. But yes, like I picture it a little bit more like militant, like military, like yeah. on the outside.
Yeah. Like that thing in Avengers that they're on in the water, but underwater.
Oh yeah. That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. That thing.
The thing.
That big barge.
Well, cause it goes underwater and then it goes up in the air.
Yeah, yeah, it can do all the things.
Yes. Okay, so he also talks to Baxian, and mm-hmm. Baxian is like pumping iron. He's trying to get his strength up now that, you know, he's feeling better. He's like, I'm trying to get to 100.
He's doing 600 pounds. And Hunt's like, you should have asked me to spot you. And he's like, I forget what he says. I didn't want to bother you. You're lunching, I think he said.
Immediately Baxian's like, well, why don't you like what are you gonna do with the halo around your head? And he's like, I can't really do anything about it, it's just gonna stay there. I need like someone like Hypaxia to get it off me, and she's not around.
Therian talks to Sendes.
Yeah, Therian talks to Sendes, but he's also again down in the dumps. We've got yeah. a lot of moody men on this chapter.
We need therapists for all of these men. These poor yes. dudes are all like, I don't deserve to live. I've hurt everyone I love.
Yes. He feels very guilty about putting Ethan in the position that he did with the Viper Queen.
And it's like he was just trying to help Ethan.
He asked Sendes, who... I'm like, who the fuck is Sendes?
Sendes is just someone who works for like the barge, right? She's like the captain on the barge.
I guess so. Yeah. So he asked her to get in touch with the Ocean Queen, but guess what? She's already coming on board tomorrow and wants to speak with him because the Viper Queen and the River Queen are harboring war for him.
Also about Therian here. I had been waiting for this the whole time. After he left the Viper Queen, he talks about how he would never be able to leave her because her venom is so addictive. And then that storyline is really just dropped. The whole time where they're rescuing them, I'm waiting yeah. for something to come up where it's like, wow, I'm dying. Like, I'm in withdrawals. Like, something, I'm having a really hard time focusing. Like, all this shit. And all that we get about it is him right now saying he's been puking his brains out because partially because of her venom and partially because he hates himself. Which is like, oh, wait, I feel like that's kind of a cop-out. He's been puking his guts out, like other than the time he's been with Hunt. He doesn't say it, but he says it to us.
Oh.
And he's been throwing up. That's the only thing we get about, like, because I thought it was going to be a real problem when he left. I thought he was going to be very sick, like Jem, basically, in yeah. Clockwork Angel.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, like, no mention of it for so long. And then we just kind of get, like, a one-off, like, oh, he's just been puking and withdrawals. But it's not even just withdrawals. It's, like, he hates himself, so... And I'm just like, what? I thought you said that was the most addictive thing you've ever tasted in your life. Like, you were staying there because you were hooked on her venom.
Yeah. Well.
That kind of annoyed me, that storyline. Because I was like, why did we even set it up to be so addictive?
I know. Because it's just kind of really convenient then. Yeah. Like, finally, I don't know.
And then it's just gone.
Yeah. Katie said, I imagine the Death Charger like District 13. And I can see that too.
Like, I can especially see that. Like underwater.
Yeah. Especially like in the scene where we get next, where like we go up to different levels and then they're like civilian clothes. And
yeah. I mean, it has to be run kind of like that in a militant way because of the atmosphere that they're in. In this, like, they have to live in this submarine all the time. Mm-hmm. It kind of is also giving the Silo, that show we watched on Apple.
It is. It is giving the Silo.
Then we go to chapter 38 and we open with my fave, Ethan Holstrom. And a book has escaped his clutches and is sliding across the floor. It's basically the monster the book, book of monsters. I know. And Jessica is like, Lehema was so much more effective at this than you.
She's like, keep it down. Enough.
She's talking to the book when she says that, though. She like scolds the book. She's like, stop it. But she does jab Ethan with that, like, Lehema was way better at this, and she was way like less of an inconvenience on me because she ate less of my food. So Jessica starts spilling her soul for the first time for like no apparent reason other than maybe the fact that she's feeling that like maybe her time is coming soon and she needs to share her story.
I said, Ethan asks questions so Ethan gets answers. Bryce never asked questions, so she get no answers.
You really think Bryce has never had a conversation with Jessica the whole time she was working for her?
In this chapter, she literally said, like, Bryce never asked me questions.
Yeah, because Bryce was respectful, but, like, she still said things to her.
True. I just, this whole chapter is giving like red lady vibes from Game of Thrones. Like, it's not my time yet. I will, and then I will perish.
I like Jessica way better than I like.
Oh, she's way better than the red woman.
Yeah.
Lady.
Bryce has never asked a question apparently in her life to Jessica, so she knows absolutely nothing about her. So we finally get to know Jessica because Ethan's asking about the books. He's like, where are these from? And she's like, from Parthos. And he's like, isn't that a myth, Parthos? And it's so old that Parthos has become like a myth, like the Library of Alexandria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Library of Parthos held 2,000 years worth of human knowledge that came before the Assyria had even invaded the world. And she enchanted some of the books to be guardians of the library itself, to like attack people who tried to steal anything from the library. But those books took on their own sentience. And so, like, they have their own awareness and they do whatever the fuck they want now, like, bite Ethan. And so she had to assign Lehema to guard her book guardians so that they didn't become more of a nuisance. Mm-hmm. And Ethan's like, why didn't you sell them? And first of all, I'm like, why the fuck would she ever sell any of these books? Like, what a stupid question. She like risked her life to save these books. You think she's gonna sell it because she put a spell on it? Come on. And she was like, I'm not letting my spells loose on the world. So Jessica was first a human, okay? She was one of the librarians at Parthos.
Sorry, is she a librarian or is she a priestess? Oh, yeah.
Priestess. She was a priestess. I mean, I think the priestesses were basically librarians. So she was one of the human priestesses. They had like a really nice community. They had their amulets that, the Arkesian amulets that protected them in there, and they protected the books. Now, when the Asterian veneer came, they wanted to burn those books, and 100,000 humans marched to protect Parthos from the burning of these books, so that they went to war while the priestesses tried to slip out with all the books on boats. Mm-hmm. But only one boat made it through, and it was called Griffin, and that's the boat that Jessica was on. The Hell Prince Apollyon has just eaten Sirius. We've talked about how he ate Sirius up, the Asteri. Mm-hmm. And he is very, very powerful in this moment when he meets Jaceba. And he's like, what's going on? Why are you risking your life for these stupid books? And what are you hiding in them? She's like, nothing. It's just knowledge. He's like, I don't believe you. There's a weapon of mass destruction in these books. And she's like, nope, it's not. And he's like, curse you. You will tell me. You're never going to age. And one day you'll get bored of never changing. And you will tell me about the weapon in these books. And she's like, you're so stupid. It's just books. But you don't understand. And he touches her to like curse her. And in doing that, since he's so powerful, he also accidentally imparts her with other magic and abilities and powers. It's like very much reminiscent of maid people when they imbue their magic and stuff by accident. Like we learn about Nesta imbuing her magic in the house when she without realizing it, and in the swords that she makes. So he ends up imbuing this Asteri magic. And again, we were talking about this last episode, how it feels like this is made means like it was made with Asteri magic, almost like warped cauldron magic with the Asteri powers. And so he is ripe with this Asteri power, and of course it leaks into her, and she's basically made. Like Jaceba is made.
Oh, I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah. So
she's one of a kind.
She's one of a kind. So she cannot age. She like changes her appearance with her powers, but like if she undoes it, it always reverts back to her like really youthful long hair. Okay, while she's telling this story, Ethan's like, who are you? How do you know all this? Like, this isn't scary. She like snaps and her hair gets long and her face gets young, and he's like, you have makeover magic. I was like, what a stupid fucking question in this context. Why are you so dumb?
Oh, Ethan.
So like the witches start to rise, and she's like, maybe I can find camaraderie there, because as time goes by, she realizes she has this magic and she has these powers that she's trying to gain hold of. And then eventually she doesn't like what the witches are doing, so she denounces them and she becomes a sorceress. She's 15,000 plus years old. So he's like, do you want to age now after all this? Ethan's like, so like, are you ready to like age? And she's like, well, not quite yet. My time will come. Like, I am tired and I don't want to be here anymore. Because she's been on the earth just for so fucking long. But she doesn't want to go until she knows that her books will truly be safe. Mm-hmm. Which is like so book lover coded.
Yeah.
So reader who was stuck in this novel coded.
She's been protecting them for so long. I can't believe she's not, I can't believe she's not found anyone to protect them, but she's just waiting for the world to be out. Basically waiting for the Asteri to be gone.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And it really like this chapter really endears you to Jaceba. Like, I thought that she was good from the beginning. Like, I had an inkling from the way that she wrote her that she was, like, not actually evil because of the way that, like, we interacted with her and her, like, God Slayer thing. And, like, she was so cool. And I was, like, wanted to learn more about her and her to be more of a part of the story the whole time. And, like, this is the biggest thing we get from her, this chapter, I feel like.
Well, and it's still, like, I hearken back to the Book of Sound, Book of Wind. What is it?
The Book of Breathing.
Book of Breathing. And apparently she had it.
Yeah. So we didn't read this ourselves, but like people told us that the Book of Breathings was in the first book of Crescent City.
Yeah. And apparently, I just don't understand that because it's a magic book and the humans did not have magic.
Well, I think that
she also probably gets books along the way.
She gets books along the way. And I think some books came through at different times, probably. Like, there is that throwaway line in Akamav for, like, a bunch of... Is it the Summer Court guy? A bunch of his books are mentioned to have, like, disappeared or been taken and disappeared in either Silver Flames or Akamav. And I'm always like, okay, are those in Crescent City now? Like, were they... brought? Or maybe it wasn't him. You know what? Maybe it was the other guy. The Dawn Court guy. One of them has a big library. There's a throwaway line about some of his books being gone. And okay. I just got the impression that maybe Jaceba has them.
The only thing you miss in this chapter is that only Jaceba and the mayor know the story of Parthos. and yes. that the mayor had aided the griffin across the sea at the behest of the Ocean Queen. So the Ocean yeah. Queen is also fucking old, unless there's been multiple versions of the old Ocean Queen.
It's her.
Yeah.
She mentions it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it's mentioned further in that the mayor yeah. have been here the whole time. Mm-hmm. They are native to Earth. Midgard. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they talk about like the civilization, this great civilization that was human civilization that was here 2,000 years ago that really valued knowledge and intellect and learning and education. And do we think that's us?
Well, remember, like 15,000 years ago was at the end of the Ice Age.
Yeah, that's for us. But like, what if this was 15,000 years in the future for us?
Oh, I
yeah,
see.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what if regular humanity was there? But that would mean there were iPhones back then.
Yeah, it might have been like
an alternate universe of Alexandria.
Yeah, Alexandria was burned down, what, in AD BC. Or BC?
I think it was BC.
When, like,
it's one of the ancient wonders of the ancient world.
So that was probably only, what, like 3,000 years ago?
Whenever you talk about, like, whenever in school they brought up the Library of Alexandria and they were like, it's burned down and you realize that you'll never be able to see it and go there, did you get sad?
Yes, I always get sad when I think about it.
I always get so sad when I think about the Library of Alexandria.
Always. It's terrible.
Like, why do you even call it an ancient wonder of the world if we can't even look at it? It's not here, you dumb bitch. Where's your proof that it even existed? You're just making me sad.
So chapter 39, we bounce back to Bryce.
Oh my God, I have so many angry notes from this chapter.
you probably feel more than I do. I'm just more like, I've died. Okay, so Bryce again is poking the bear, and she tells a story of, because she wants to get rid of him now that she's got
her back
info.
To Bryce and her dad.
Yeah, Bryce and the Autumn King. So Bryce now tells a story of Randall, because she's like, you know why I know so much about love, and it's not just because of my mom. That Randall, he got a call one night to help her mom and Bryce escape from you. From the high priest.
She was 3 years old at the time.
Yeah. So also, he got a call from the high priest. So like the priests and priestesses are still around. Like the human priests and priestesses are still around.
Yes.
Like their community.
Yeah.
I don't know much about like the human stuff.
We don't know much about the human community in general. Like,
no.
Because when we were talking about it, like Randall used to be on the front lines of just like the human war.
Yeah.
And like that's just must be constant.
Yeah, and he, to like save Bryce and her mom, he put a bullet in one of the Autumn King's like goon's head after he swore he'd never use a gun again because he was in love with Bryce's mom. He knew it after three days. So cute. And Bryce learned of love through her mom and Randall.
Yeah.
And so she tells this story.
She tells it to her dad. And he's like, so jealous of him.
Yeah.
Bryce like comes up to her dad and is like, you're so jealous of him. And he's like, I'm bored of you. And she's like, I was bored of you the second you opened your mouth when I got here. And then the Gorsian shackle locks around his hand. Mm-hmm. And then her other one falls off her hand. Like you get a really like boom, ha 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 vibe from her. And he's like, you little bitch. And then Bryce starts going off like, you thought I came here by accident because I was your fumbly bumbly daughter. But I plan to come here all along to get information from you, you dumbass. Okay, so my note here says, Bryce frees her yourself. And yes, I'm glad she's free, but she's so fucking annoying. So stupid. I meant to be here. I landed on here for a purpose to leech information from you. And I knew the Rune had keys in his room the whole time. I literally have all caps like, shut up, Bryce. You kept it from him, but you also kept it from us. And it's fucking annoying because you knew we weren't going to tell anyone. You lying, pathological liar, pain in my ass.
Wait, you thought, did you think that she came there on purpose?
No, so I had like the thought, but then I let it go because it went on for so long.
Yeah.
And then this happens and I'm just like, you're such an asshole.
I just, even though she put the shackles on him and he doesn't have his power, like, he's still large and he could still, like, run at her. But he literally doesn't try anything.
Well, she has the star sword already. And he's scared of the star sword because he's been studying it his whole life. So what happens is that she's like, oh, it's too bad. You sent everybody away, so there's going to be no one here to hear you screaming. And she's like, oh, and it's too bad that you turned off all the electronics, so there's no internet for you to message people to come help you. And you're going to get stuck in a closet because that's where I'm about to lock you up. And so she takes the sword and truth teller and herds him down into the closet. She's like, I put a bucket of water in here, so you should survive until some of your goons open up the door to figure out what's going on. And then she has the nerve to, like, lock the door and then, like, put her sword over her shoulder and whistle as she walks out. And I'm just like, you're so annoying. You are not a cartoon character. Stop fucking whistling as you walk away after locking
your
father in the closet.
She's very proud of herself.
She's so proud of herself. It's so annoying because she's just, like, so secretive to us. Mm-hmm. Like, I was so mad at her. She's like, it was the hardest decision I ever made to come here first and not to Hunt. But I had, as I suspected, Hunt was still in the jail cells and this was too important. I'm just like, fuck off.
Why wouldn't you go get him in the first place? You have all this power now. Anyways, he also, like, he when he gets pushed into the underground the closet. Dungeon closet thing, he'll go like, I'll kill you and your little bitch mother for this.
Oh, yeah. Your little bitch mom, too. Very Wizard of Oz.
Also, she used the star sword and, like, bops him on the head with it.
Oh, my God. She bops him on the nose.
Nose.
Like, Bryce, please stop.
I think this scene would be like a really bad CW scene because of all the little things, like the whistling. Yep. It's very, yep, Catherine.
It is. You have to be, like, really talented to pull it off, or you're gonna sound really cheesy and, yep, dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, it really gives cartoon. It gives, like, Elmer Fudd to me. Like, swinging his gun over his shoulder as he's, like, hunting for wabbits. Like, I don't know. Then she goes to her dad's office and she investigates the prisms and she, like, throws her light through it. And you can see light, parts of her light, starlight, but also darkness now in her starlight. And she thinks it used to be pure before she took in Celine's light. So it's like, what is this? How is this going to affect her, the darkness in her power now? Mm. And then she was like, ooh, what would happen if I shot my light through this prism and through this prism and made them run into each other and explode into, like, energy? And it would probably supercharge her or something. This, mm-hmm, is what she guesses. So she does it. It kind of reminds me of, like, a particle accelerator and, mm, how, like, when you bang particles into each other really fast, you get, like, antimatter. And, mm, we were just talking about, like, antimatter, mm-hmm, with the sword and truth teller in the last episode. So I thought that was really interesting. But she slams them together and basically steps into where they're hitting each other. And
darkness and light smashed together and she stepped into it and teleported her home to Hunt. It was the power she needed. Darkness shapes the light.
So it's basically, I guess, saying that, like, darkness and the light, you need both. Like, they're balance. Everything lives in balance or whatever. Mm-hmm. She also gives the floor the finger as she's teleporting out. No one can see you. It's like she except knows we're watching.
Us. I mean, if you've ever been so mad where you have to give someone the finger and they don't even know, like, their back is turned, have you ever done that? Like,
of course I have.
So,
but I usually do the hand bang together thing from Friends.
Oh,
I don't like using the finger.
Okay, I've used the finger here and there, but I've definitely done it to Alex.
And, like, no, it's just, it wouldn't be that annoying to me if she hadn't done everything else before. But, like, the bop on the nose, the whistling. The muhahaha, you thought that I was a sign from Erd, like that I had landed here. Like, she's just so high on her own cleverness. And like, she's putting on a show about it to us. This is what's going on. Like, it feels like a show, but then she's not letting us in on the parts where if it was a show, she could be like, hey guys, I came here on purpose. I have a master plan. So she doesn't trust us.
Yeah. This whole part about like the prisons and at first it went over my head. The second time reading it, I was just like, ugh, I'm trying to understand what you're doing here, but I really don't. It really gives
it
like...
It doesn't come back into play. So
no, it doesn't. But like the darkness in her light, this really reminds me of Once Upon a Time. I don't know if you remember this, but like they have like their hearts are like when the queen pulls out their hearts, they're like these glowing like red hearts. Yeah. And so like most everyone's heart is like... has a little bit of darkness in them, but like Snow White's heart is like pure. But then she starts doing like some bad stuff and like the queen pulls it out and she goes, look at that, a little bit of darkness right there. So that reminds me of this, but apparently the darkness is good. And that's like, oh, did we talk about how, oh, that she used her magic from Selene that had been stored there and no one had ever taken it, yeah. Not even her son.
And she's wondering why.
Yeah, she's wondering why. Maybe no one really had her power that could probably take it, you know, because she is the heir, right?
Yeah, it's curious, though. It's curious. I feel like we're planting a seed there. Mm. Like, why? And, you know, the series isn't over, so we're potentially planting the seeds for some darkness in Bryce, I think.
Oh, interesting. That's cool. I'm going to read this part that I pulled from the book just so we can have it out in the ether. When she focused her power into the prison, it wasn't a rainbow that emerged from the other side, not even close. It took her a moment to process what she was seeing, a gradient beam of starlight. Where the rainbow would have been full of color, this one began in shimmering white light and descended into shadow, an anti-rainbow, as it were. Mm-hmm.
See, that's also interesting because... her relatives have those shadow powers too. So it could be also even planting maybe that she could harness those shadow abilities too, that she hasn't accessed and tapped into it yet because it's new. So
yeah, that's really interesting that like possibly Bryce could be a villain. I hope she's not, but I don't
think it would be villain, but maybe like battling inner demons sort of a thing, you know, like, yeah. I don't think she'd go full demon. Well, we could see something like Theia, like, because Theia presumably started off with good intentions, but
Theia wanted power.
Warped
Bryce doesn't want power.
Yeah, but the more power you have sometimes turns you into someone who wants more power. You know, like how power corrupts. So... I don't know. She can go a lot of different ways with this. Like, it could be a plant for a lot of different things. So we'll see. But we go back to Rune and Lydia. Mm-hmm. Lydia has woken up.
Okay, wait. And... Hold on. There's...
Okay. Is there something before she wakes up?
No, I just had to comment on this. Rune is still at Lydia's bedside, okay?
Still there.
And he wakes up. One moment, he looks at her, unconscious, looks away, looks back. Then she's awake!
And her golden eyes are looking at him.
Yeah, and it literally, at first there's one sentence, her skin was pale and so cold. Golden eyes, wow, it's giving Edward.
It's a Twilight reference. So she looks at him and she's like, am I dead or am I alive? And he's like, you're alive. And she's like, where are we? And he's like, wow, she's got some, you know, amnesia issues after all that brain damage. And he's like, we're on the depth charger. Don't you remember? You planned this. And then she just gets up and starts fucking running. This was the weirdest fucking part of the book for me.
No.
I was just like, what's going on? You have to like also picture this because I don't think I was even picturing this as weird as it fucking is the first time I read it.
Yeah, no.
Because we didn't know where she was going.
Yeah.
But she's like a mental patient sprinting unoccupied through the hospital to the children's wing, yeah. to the high school wing.
Yeah, with holes in her, like her arm.
And she's in like a hospital gown, like yeah. just sprinting like a crazy. And then she gets to her child's classroom and smashes her face up against the window.
Like how terrifying for all those children.
They're like a bunch of teenagers. Like, of course they're embarrassed of her. She just ran and smacked her face against the window. And then she puts her hand up against it too.
Which probably is bloody from the IVs and all those things in
her. She's like a crazy lady. And it's just like, first of all, why?
She had to make sure that they were alive. That was her first instinct as she woke.
She could have asked somebody. Like, she could have asked somebody. She could have taken just a 1/2 second thought to herself, like, maybe this is scary what I'm doing.
Well, also, like, she is barely healed. And same with Rune. As like the second time reading this, I did see the whole thing happen before my eyes, because she like pulls everything off, jumps and like goes to the glass thing, waits for it to like whirl open. Tristan's on the other side with coffee and he's like, what the fuck? And then she starts going and she's like stumbling and like just
running
drunk
into walls
walking
because her legs are brand new. She had to rebuild them.
One of the nurses is like, oh my gosh. And then Rune's like, what? And then like running after her the same. And she's going up and up and up. Like she's going upstairs. She's not taking an elevator. And then, oh my Lord. Like, come on, girl.
Just so dramatic. And I understand like the mental drama, but like the physical way that she approaches this with like Lydia is a very logical woman, and we see her like withstand so much
pressure
from so many different things and not break. Mm-hmm. And to have her wake up and immediately be like, dude, it's a rational crazy lady thing where she like slams. I keep picturing there's this gif from Parks and Rec where like Leslie Knope is like high on sugar and she like runs into the window like this. And like that is Lydia running to her child's classroom, who she's never seen in her life. Oof. A full classroom of all their 14-year-old friends. It's really sad and really embarrassing. And she's like, why don't you like me? Like, eventually.
And also, like, Rune's like, there's mostly mer children. So it's not just.
Oh, yeah. And there's just, he's like, I can't process this right now. What do you mean? Then she can't have kids. And he's like, so you have brothers on this ship? And she's like, not brothers. They're my sons. It's giving. But like, Michael obviously had much more reason to be frantic on Lost because his son was taken. But like, my son! Like, it's giving that energy. When like there's really no rush or threat in this moment to like give her this like high intensity run into the window reaction, you know? Like, she could have walked up to the window. Mm-hmm. Like, she could have talked while she was going there instead of sprinting without speaking. It was very like, what the fuck? I remember like I wanted to talk to someone after this and be like, what the fuck was this? Yeah, it was like just to give Lydia some backstory.
It was very random. I remember like you talk to me and you're like, that was very random. I'm like, that was very random.
Yeah, the educator, the teacher comes out and she's like, sweetie, I know you want to see your sons, but maybe go back to the hospital and get cleared by your doctor first.
Yeah. Like, well, it's giving like Wanda in WandaVision with her sons, Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's giving like somebody talk to her before she like scars her sons with being traumatic in front of all their friends. That happens. I didn't draw the line of where we got to chapter 40. Is there
chapter 40? We jump
but back. Is there more in this chapter or is this
no, that's it. End of it was like, they're my sons.
Okay.
Chapter 40, we start with Hunt and Therion, and they are about to meet the Ocean Queen. It's rumored that the Ocean Queen is the daughter of Ogenis.
Oh, yeah. Who's a goddess. The goddess. Yeah.
Yes. So she enters the room and she's tiny.
Before she enters the room, I just want to talk about how there's like an earthquake as she gets onto the ship.
Really? Oh, I missed that.
Because she's so powerful. So you're saying she's tiny. There's so much more description. And like the more you think about the description, the weirder it gets.
I have
so
the whole description here.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, she introduced her as, before we even describe her, Her Depthless Majesty, the Ocean Queen.
Depthless.
I'm like, depthless? Because like when you think about depthless, I know they're saying like she goes on and on forever, but like the way that you say depthless means she has no depth, like if you listen to it another way.
I think it's more like boundless.
Yeah, I know what she's trying to give boundless with it, but like you could really also hear it as depthless, like she's depthless. I mean, the interpretation of depthless is like the ocean. It goes on and on forever. But like, I also went to, oh, shallow.
I think, I don't know. I first heard that, I was like, ooh, I would like to be called depthless. That was my first instinct.
Of course. Oh my God. All right. Read her description and let's break this down.
Okay. She is tiny. She's like half the size.
4 feet tall.
Yeah. She's like half the size of Senda's. Her
lush. Hey, hold on. Wait. Caitlin says it reminds me when my ex said I lacked depth. True story. I know. That's what I mean.
Okay. Her luscious body measured barely more than 4 feet. Her skin was as pale as the belly of a fish.
Okay. So she's got like gray, pale skin.
Probably very glowy.
Yeah, like shiny.
Yeah. Her angular eyes as dark as a shark's.
So like shark eyes.
But like angular still. So are they like,
I'm just picturing like black holes of eyes.
Yeah.
Because like sharks have like beady black eyes.
Yeah. But they're angular. They're not beady. So I'm okay. I think she has normal shaped eyes.
Normal shapes with black holes in them.
Oh, you know, it's giving, you haven't seen Dune 2 yet, but it's giving it's giving Austin Butler's like little playthings.
All right. Well, haven't seen Dune 2 means nothing to me.
Okay. If anyone has, then you'll know. Her heart-shaped face was neither pretty, the Harkonnen women, thank you. Her heart-shaped face was neither pretty nor plain, and the rosebud-shaped lips were the reddish pink of a snapper.
It's just a weird image that we're portraying. And like we do,
I have more.
Oh, there's more.
She walked with a strange sort of lightness.
Wait. Yeah. Like, she leaves a wet footprint.
But she doesn't appear wet.
She's not wet.
Yeah.
So this woman's just like leaving a trail of like sweat along as she walks.
She walked with a strange sort of lightness, like she was unused to being on solid ground. And the gown of kelp and sea fans she wore trailed behind her, the shells and coral in the train tinkling as she moved.
And only her eyes moved and nothing else. A true apex predator. So she's just like stiff like a vampire walking with her eyes like going back and forth like a painting in a horror movie. Oh, it's just, it's giving like a SpongeBob scene to me. But also at the same time, okay, I can't help but picture Calypso from Pirates of the Caribbean because she is the ocean queen in my head.
Calypso.
And much like Calypso, she can grow at will. Yeah. Which is very interesting. She's like practically one of Davy Jones' minions from Pirates in like the second one. Like they have like fish scales and like weird eyes and shit.
Uh-huh. No, yeah, basically. Hunt, Baxian, and Therion all takes their seats, and Therion sits like the farthest away. And then Hunt looks up and he's like, ah, he slithered over there. And then Hunt looks at Baxian and Baxian basically gives him a face like, we're all in the shitter. I don't know. I don't know. He said something. They're all just like kind of scared.
They're all fucked.
Yeah, they're all fucked.
Tharion's the most fucked, and he's like ready to take it and like die. Basically, that's what Hunt says. He like looks like he's ready to just like accept his fate and die, which is so sad.
So the Ocean Queen begins to grow in size and like begins to grow bigger than Sen does, and she says to Tharion that he brought trouble to her doorstep.
Yeah, because the Viper Queen has a bounty on his head. And the River Queen is like, I'm going to go to war if you don't give him to me.
Mm-hmm. But this chapter breaks up because we bump back to Lydia and then bump back to Tharion.
Oh, okay.
It's so frustrating.
My notes are so weird here.
So to continue on this scene and not make it more confusing, the Viper Queen has a bounty on Kedos's head for 3 million, 5 million for her, if he's alive. The River Queen is threatening war with the Ocean Queen. And then at the end of the chapter, Bryce comes in and says that Tharion serves her.
It's more dramatic because the River Queen's like, give me one good reason not to give you up. And then you hear Bryce and she's like, you're going to piss off a third queen if you give him up. And she has the nerve to wink. Like, come on. Hunt is like, am I still alive? Is this real?
Oh, finally, Bryce is with them.
It was a really great moment. We were waiting for Bryce to meet up with them for so long. Finally, she's back with the crew. But in the Lydia section, like, the educator's talking to her, and she's like, can I meet them? Like, in what world would you want to meet them like this?
In your state.
In your current state. And she's like, you can meet them later. And she's like, okay. like, girl, you're Let, giving
let's call
asylum.
Their adopted parents first.
Yes. Yes, like, you are a random lady who just came running out of nowhere to their classroom. You're giving very creepy vibes. This is scary.
At the end of that, she faints.
Oh, yeah, she faints and Rune catches her or something.
Yeah.
And that's Lydia's random ass fucking scene in the middle of the book.
Katie said she screamed when Bryce showed up. Best entrance.
Yeah. It was a great entrance. I was like, yeah. Because I did not want Tharion to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. And also, it's the first time we hear Bryce kind of call herself a queen, because she's basically checkmated the king. And so she's just taking on like, oh, well, I'm the queen now. He's locked in a closet and I overpowered him. So to me, it's giving. I wrestled the wands from Draco Malfoy. So now I can use all the wands I wrestled from him. You don't have to kill them to become the new owner. So that's where we end on a big, like, fun cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. That is going to be our episode today. We would love to hear any of your thoughts and theories. As always, email us at thoseforkingfangirls@gmail.com. We'd love to read them on the show, discuss them. If you don't follow the podcast already on your favorite podcast listening app, we'd greatly appreciate it if you followed it for free over on any of the listening apps. And if you want to support the pod in a bigger way, we have a Patreon. And we have lots of fun perks over there. You get the show ad-free. You get the main show ad-free. You get an extra show, half an hour add-on to the main show every week, where we talk about personal things happening in our lives. It's super fun. We love the community over there. And
you can come to the live and talk with us.
Oh, yeah. And you can come to the live and be in the chat and be putting in your two cents as we talk all things Hofoss and onward. Link to is in our show notes. It's patreon.com/thoseforkingfangirls if you want to give that. Give that a look-see. There's a free trial. We offer a free trial for 7 days if you want to try it out before deciding if you want to commit to the Patreon. If you're not following us on Instagram, we are at Those Forking Fangirls on Instagram, on TikTok, wherever is your preferred method. I mean, there's definitely more information on Instagram. So if you want to keep
more
up
of the communities there. Yeah,
more of the communities over there. We release Chapter Chat every Thursday and our main show, where we talk about fandom and all sorts of stuff going on as adults who love nerdy shit, is every Friday. If you haven't checked that out yet, give it a listen. It's a fun time. We do pop culture news and we do what we're reading and watching right now. And then we always have like a main topic discussion that's really interesting and fun. So, well,
thanks, guys.
Thanks for being here. My name's Christine.
I'm Natasha.
And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.